You're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and my guest this week is Lane Murphy. Lane is the news editor of Baylor Magazine and the owner of Second and Clay, an event space housed in the historic St. James Methodist Building in downtown Waco. But before we learn about Lane's plans for preserving this important piece of Black history, it's the word on the street. You've heard me talk about Franklin Square, a new mixed-use project from the Turner Barringer Development Company. The first tenant, Waco Running Company, debuted its new digs this past weekend, and I caught up with their marketing director, Thomas Winsell.
Opening weekend was great. We had a constant flow of people coming in. Everybody was really excited. Heard a lot about how the running company was going to be a good social space for the community, and everybody was excited to kind of get it in its own separate entity.
Waco Running Company had occupied a portion of Bicycle World there on University Parks, but felt confident that an expanded concept was something downtown would embrace.
Well, with the downtown growth, I feel like it's important because we're able to engage with runners. You know, a lot of times with people not knowing that it was in Bicycle World, they now have a pretty scenic space. This building's really unique.
Waco Running Company is open at 700 Franklin Avenue from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, and 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. One of my favorite Instagram accounts is Historic Texas. Trace Chitwood travels all across our great state photographing the historical structures and architectural details inherent in the Lone Star. I noticed he was in McGregor last week, asked him to come by KWBU, and he was gracious enough to give me a little time. Trace, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Man, thank you. I really appreciate it. I just had a great time being here this morning, and it's just awesome to be here.
So let's take Waco specifically. When you drive around Waco, what do you see?
So one really fascinating architect that's not very well known is Milton Scott of Waco. He designed the Bolling Company. It's now the Dr. Pepper Museum in 1906, and thankfully it has survived the May 1953 tornado, and I like to call it Marsonization obliteration.
And in greater Central Texas, I know you spent a lot of time in McGregor, as you said. Gatesville has some fabulous architecture. What do you see in the surrounding areas?
Yeah, Gatesville
Waco
is a great example. So another architect from Waco, Wesley Clark Dodson, he was a Civil War veteran, and he was actually crippled. And somehow, after that, he got into the profession of architecture. For example, of some of his works in Waco, he did the old City Hall building that was demolished and replaced with the current Art Deco structures there now. But he also designed the Gatesville Coryell County Courthouse. That was one of his later works. To see his earlier stuff from the 1880s, example of that would be the Lampasas, Weatherford, Granbury, and a current project I'm really excited about is the Fanning County Courthouse that he designed in 1888. It just got a grant. It was a grant recipient of the Texas Historic Courthouse Preservation Program set up by George W. Bush. It will be completely restored to its original design, because in 1929, in December, it caught fire and the clock tower and the original roof was burnt. And then in the 1960s, they covered it, all the original stonework, up in these concrete slabs. So it was really just transformed into a completely different design from what it originally was from this Waco architect that I know of.
You know, after World War II, we had urban renewal programs all across the country that damaged a lot of the beautiful architecture that we had done in the early parts of the 1900s. And it seems that now in 2017, we have much more of an awareness about adaptive reuses and placemaking and keeping these historic structures. I'd imagine that you get really excited when you see something like the Magnolia Silos that took old vacant grain elevators and they turned it into a massive commercial success.
Yeah, I think they really inspired with that television show. Some other people, besides what they have done, people are really becoming more aware of what they have as a state, and they should have more awareness and respect for what they have instead of letting it be faded into the past and demolished.
15 seconds, what's your favorite Texas courthouse and why?
I'd have to say probably Ellis County and Waxahachie. Another thing that actually comes together with Waco, designed by James Riley Gordon, beautiful structures, and he also designed the Arizona State Capitol building. So awesome.
Trace Chitwood, you can find him on Instagram at historic_Texas. Thank you so much for joining me on Downtown Depot.
Really appreciate it, Austin. I had so much fun.
The St. James Methodist Church building at 2nd and Clay is a Tudor Gothic brick structure that opened in 1924 and was designed by Texas architect Carlton Adams. It was purchased last year by Lane Murphy and his wife, who are now in the process of determining the best and highest use. Lane, welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you.
So why don't you start by telling me a little bit about your history with Waco and how you ended up in this wonderful city?
Okay. Well, I came to attend Baylor and met my wife here. We both stayed for graduate school.
And what year was this that you came to Waco?
In 2000. So we've been here 17 years now. And I studied English Environmental Studies, and my wife studied social work, and she started working in town, and so did I. I started with Baylor Magazine as my first full-time job, and I've taught it freshman English as an adjunct on the side, and my wife teaches social work at Baylor as well. So
The Baylor Magazine, mm-hmm. Tell me exactly how that works. What's the purpose of the Baylor Magazine? How do you source the stories?
Right. So it's a quarterly publication, and we meet with our bosses and in groups and try to talk about what's going on with the university, try to cover all the different entities within. And since there are so many different things going on, it's really hard to narrow down. But we try to stay on topics that have to do with the mission of the university or alumni who are doing really neat or interesting things and talk about them. So a couple of recent stories we've done is the Heart of Texas Human Trafficking Coalition, just because there are a lot of alumni involved with that. And then also the downtown story that I worked on that came out in the spring, I believe, was just about different Baylor alumni who have a role in helping redevelop and revitalize downtown. So things like that.
How cool for you to get to see this development in downtown, but have a foot in both camps. You're mm-hmm. in the journalistic side covering mm-hmm. it for Baylor Magazine, mm-hmm. but your wife Amy and you are also a part of this development, having acquired the church at 2nd and Clay, the former St. James Methodist building.
Yes, it's been really interesting. I was pushing to write a story about downtown for a long time, even before the Magnolia thing started, just because there were so many different people doing different things to really try to get downtown going. And of course, once the Magnolia market took off, then that was an even bigger impetus for us to go ahead and write something and cover pretty much as many different aspects as we could, from food trucks to traditional businesses to just people doing all kinds of different things to make downtown better.
In writing that Downtown Bears cover story, mm-hmm. what was a particularly interesting moment that you had with one of the people that you interviewed?
Yeah, I think you may have had Marshall Stueman on your show before. Having someone like that basically uproot from the Metroplex and put all their eggs in their basket, in one basket in downtown Waco, I think brings a lot of credibility to that there's a legitimate opportunity here, and that you're going from a big market to somewhere that seems smaller, but you still believe that the future here is bright. And so that was one thing, I guess. Another part was talking with some of the younger people that were fresh out of Baylor. There are more students that are interested in staying in Waco than ever before, and there are quite a few individuals and groups that are trying to retain those students upon graduation and get them to stay here. And not because they necessarily, none of them ever did want to stay here, but to give them opportunities in all different facets, from white-collar work to entrepreneurs who want to start their own businesses and have those opportunities be available in a big way for a larger number of people.
You deal with 18, 19-year-olds mm-hmm. in your freshman English class, many of whom are coming to Waco with very little knowledge of life outside of the Baylor campus.
Right.
How do we incentivize them, educate them as to the benefits of staying in Waco?
Sure. Yes. I think there's more collaboration from writing that story than there ever has been in terms of Baylor leaders and city leaders working together to make that happen. It's much more intentional. There are several roles. I know of at least two where, you know, Baylor pays part of someone's salary and the city pays part of someone's salary to play those exact roles in connecting current students with downtown and with greater Waco in general, with internship opportunities and events like the, I forget what they call it, but it was when they had the event that the students could float down the river with a concert over the summer, and just different ways to show that Waco is cool and we want you to stay and we're focused on, you know, making Waco a fun place to be. There's lots of things like that that are happening that went, you know, in 2000 when I got to Baylor, those just weren't things that happened. And sure, people are intentionally thinking about that, spending money on it, and kind of showcasing Waco to parents of current students and also students while they're here to get out and see. And not, of course, a lot of students are always do service within the community, but may not think necessarily about working here, business opportunities on a serious level. But once they see those opportunities are there, I think there's a greater chance that students will want to stay in greater numbers.
One of the organizations which you're referencing is called Campus Town, which mm-hmm. is an initiative through Prosper Waco,
right,
headed up by a guy, a young Baylor graduate named mm-hmm. Evan Hebert. Mm-hmm. And Evan's entire job is connecting with employers to get students who want to stay in Waco and find suitable work for them. So you're right, Lane. There are tons of resources for Baylor students mm-hmm. who are wanting to stay in the area. And something that I realized once I graduated from Texas A&M was that, you know, you're in college and maybe there's 50 majors, 100 majors, whatever it might be. And you get out and you realize there's a million ways to make a dollar. Mm. And we can get a little bit of tunnel vision when we're in the classroom and thinking, okay, I'm a finance major. I need to come out and I need to work in finance. And you learn very quickly once you exit the college ranks that the world really doesn't categorize things in the way that your college administration did. And if you want to stay in Waco, there is a way for you to make a living here if you're aggressive and you're willing to work hard. Because, right, like you said, there's so much opportunity.
Yes, I agree. I think it's easy for a college student to think, oh, this is my major and this is what I need to do. These are the ideal jobs if you have this major. But for my wife and I and a lot of other people in Waco, I think, you know, Waco is where we wanted to be and we were going to find a way to make it work. And because of the low cost of living, the affordable housing and opportunities for employment at Baylor and other places, then you can really make that happen. And now I think it's people who do want to stay within their field and not only stay within their field but have an ideal job, that's going to be much more prevalent in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. You're going to be able to find pretty much exactly what you're looking for. It's what I anticipate happening.
And the cost of living and housing in particular mm-hmm. has been hitting really hard for me lately. Julia and I actually just closed on our first home.
Oh, awesome. Congratulations.
We're really excited. We're going to be moving into Dean Highland and finally mm-hmm. moving out of downtown where we've lived for 3 years at the mm-hmm. Praetorian Building and have loved being a part of that energy and the vibe that is downtown. Mm-hmm. But going to the cost of living and housing, we have been able to accelerate our growth timeline with Pokios mm-hmm. because we have not had to spend so much simply on our daily expenses.
Right.
You know, it's less expensive for us to rent a kitchen downtown in Waco than mm-hmm. it would be for us to rent a kitchen in downtown Austin. Mm. And so it allows you, if you are willing to stay in Waco, to open up all these other possibilities that if I were living in Dallas, for instance, I would probably have never thought to reach out to the NPR station and say, hey, I'm a small business owner. Can I have a show where I talk to other small business owners about the wonderful things happening in our city? But Waco has the opportunities because, like I say on here all the time, not everything's already been done here.
That's right. There's lots of opportunity. And I would even say for my wife and I mean, we've been married for 10 years. And, you know, as a social worker and a writer, it's not like we're bringing home the big bucks. But over time, we were able to save and think about starting a business, you know, once we saw opportunities downtown. It's not so – you think about going into business in a downtown in any major city, and it takes millions and millions of dollars to start, but Waco's not in that place. You can start with a small amount and build in a way that you couldn't in, like you said, a place that already has everything, essentially.
Downtown Depot listeners, hear me when I say, I'm a food truck owner. Lane is an English teacher. somehow Len and his wife now own a beautiful historic structure in downtown and trying to find the right way to move forward with it. So know that the idea of being a part of this downtown environment, being a part of Waco's ascendance, is not far away. If you're willing to get involved, the opportunities are there. And I can only speak for myself when I say that I don't have all the answers. I don't totally know what I'm doing. I stopped by 2nd and Clay this last weekend during the celebration, and you showed me some awesome old Sanborn fire maps and other fabulous antiques that you had there. And we both kind of had a frank discussion like, hey, we're not totally sure what either of us are doing here, but we're glad to be meeting each other and getting to learn a little bit more about our city and its history.
That's right. Yes. It's just been a great opportunity with the church to meet a lot of different people and stakeholders in downtown, you know, going back 143 years with the congregation. You know, it was one of the first African-American congregations in Waco. And, you know, 1874 is started by former slaves with Reverend Anderson Brack, you know, on the banks of the Brazos. And they've always been right in that community. So we feel a big responsibility to honor that history and take care of the building and also preserve the history of the people that were there and that still continue to meet in a different location now.
So how did the relationship with the St. James congregation and your wife and you come about?
Yeah, so we were looking for a small, you know, 1,000 square feet downtown to have an antiques business. And we looked and looked and couldn't find anything of that size. We were trying to stay affordable. And then one day we saw a story in the paper that Bob Darden, who heads up the Black Gospel Music Restoration Project at Baylor, he helped get that written because he was hoping someone local would buy it and preserve the building, just because he was afraid with all the development in the area that someone could end up buying it that didn't care about the building but only cared about the land and wanted to build something new. So we saw the story. We said, right on, we hope someone buys it. And then 6 months later, we saw it was still for sale, and we decided, well, we know the listing realtor. We should at least go take a look, even though it's probably not what we need for antiques. And so we walked in, and something happened where we just fell in love with it. And it sounds kind of corny maybe, but we felt a calling to be involved in preserving and saving the building and to try to find a way to do that. And so several months later, after some negotiations with the church and some real efforts to find direction, we ended up with the building. We went to a couple of services there. We went to their 142nd anniversary service and their deconsecration service, which was extremely powerful. We didn't even know that kind of thing existed, but it was a time when the bishops from the Methodist Church came down and basically said, you know, this building is no longer consecrated for worship. And so it was very powerful. You know, there were people wailing. There was a lot of sadness, but the congregation also saw it as an opportunity to start ministering more in a more intentional way to people in the community, because they were really only down to about 15 members, and it was just overwhelming to have that a building of that size to keep up with. And so they saw it as a new beginning in a way to get back into the community and focus on ministry more than they had been able to, kind of held back a little bit by the burden of the building itself. So
you're listening to Downtown Depot on 103.3 KWBU-FM. My guest today is Lane Murphy, a news editor for Baylor Magazine and one of the owners, along with his wife, of the former St. James Church at 2nd and Clay. As you're moving forward with the St. James Church project, I know that Amy and you were trying to get some direction mm-hmm. as to where to go. You had antiques there this last weekend mm-hmm. over celebration. It was mm-hmm. a fabulous locale for it. What have you two learned about each other since mm-hmm. you acquired this building? I love asking people about their relationships, because I know with Pokio's, at least, I've learned so much about myself mm-hmm. and my wife because we spend hours together every day trying to build this small business. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you've taken away from this last few months working so closely with Amy in that place?
Sure. Well, we've had the building about a year now, and You know, I say we've had it. I don't know if we'll ever feel like owners. We really feel like caretakers of it, and we want it to be there 100 years more. You know, Amy being a social worker, she's more in tune to what's going on in the community in terms of what all kinds of people need and what resources are available. She's more in tune with, I guess, people in general than I am. She's more social. And then I've discovered that I'm, I guess, a little better at taking on some of the detail-oriented work that has to be done. I'm not afraid of a challenge. You know, it has a historic marker. It's in the downtown zone that we'll have to deal with different things that other areas don't, such as the TIF and things like that. So it's putting together a puzzle and a project, and I think we work well together. She has vision for what the space could be used for, and I have hopefully some skill in at least not being afraid to try to figure out how to make that happen.
You currently have been using the space as a home for your antiques business?
Well, no, we just had a one-time sale there. That's just
And that was just for this celebration weekend.
Right. We just thought it was a good time when people were in town to have something. We've used it a few other times. The What About Waco documentary, filmed some interviews there. We've had a couple of concerts just to showcase the acoustics of the building, which are pretty great. Preservation Texas had their statewide conference here in the spring, and they met at the building for one of their sessions. And then things like the Historic Waco Foundation is going to meet there next month. You know, there are things like that we can do with the space just to show it off, because honestly, we feel like it's a kind of a gem that's hidden in plain sight just because it's been not well attended over the past, you know, decade or so. And a lot of Waco people have never been in it. So they've driven past and always wondered what the inside looked like. And we want to, going forward, allow people to do that regardless of use.
What was this past weekend like at Second and Clay using it as a showroom for your antiques?
It went pretty well. We've sold a couple of other times at the celebration in one of the vendor tents. And this is really the third time we've ever had a sale of any kind. So we're new at that as well, but we've been collecting old things for a long time. But we decided the building is now going to be our one big antique, and the others we're just trying to more or less liquidate to raise money for the building. But it was great. We met people from all over the country, California, Washington, New York, even in Canada. We had people come by, and then there were also a lot of local Wacoans who were curious about the building and wanted to come see it. So we're always excited to show it off and show people what it is and what it could be in the future.
Was there a piece this last weekend that got purchased that in your heart you would kind of wish that somebody had looked over it and maybe you'd still had it in your storehouse on Monday morning?
Well, pretty much everything we had was in our house at one point. So all of it we feel somewhat emotionally attached to. But I guess one of the most curious items was a plastic eyeball that was used for training doctors and physicians, but it was on a stand. It kind of looked cool for Halloween, I guess, but someone bought that and took it back to Mississippi, I think.
Where do you find these antiques?
Well, estate sales, online occasionally. Went to garage sales a lot, but we've been collecting our whole married life, so you know, wherever we see a sale, we try to stop and see what's there.
What are some of your favorite parts of the Murphy family collection that we will never have an opportunity to buy that you're going to be hanging on to?
Well, it's probably the maps that I had a chance to show you, the Sanborn maps of Waco from 1893. I had the chance to buy those a couple years back, and it's just a very rare thing in a piece of Waco history that not a lot of people have the chance to own, so if there was ever a fire in our house, that would be the thing that I carried out.
Well, and what's particularly fabulous about this collection of the Sanborn fire maps, which was a company that went to cities all throughout Texas mm-hmm. and would draw maps of the buildings and the dimensions, is that you actually have hand-drawn copies.
Yes, we have a few of the outlying communities outside of Waco, 8 or 10 of those, and those are from 1897. So a lot of those were maps that probably are one of a kind. I mean, they were drawn by the person, and it has the name and the date they were drawn. So,
well, now that you're a few months into the Second and Clay project, mm-hmm. and have learned a lot about your marriage and about yourself and about being a part of the downtown community, what are some of your visions? I know that it's always changing. What do you see that church being?
Right. So first and foremost, it's about preservation of the building and it's the history of the people there. And no matter what else happens, we want that to happen. For the sanctuary, which will hold about 500 people, right now we're envisioning that as event space going forward, things like weddings, concerts, conferences. We think a gospel brunch would be really awesome in there. That's the kind of thing that we're thinking for that area. We've entertained arts organizations. You know, there could be future art shows and things like that in that space. And then underneath the sanctuary is a half basement with the old fellowship hall and classrooms and an old kitchen. And so that part is really, it seems to lend itself to food already because food's been had and served down there for over 90 years. And so we're working towards a goal of having a full-time food establishment down there, and it's another 5,500 square feet, so there's plenty of room. And that's kind of the two things that we feel the most strongly about going forward. The sanctuary, you know, it could be a place where startup churches meet on Sundays going forward, you know, that kind of thing. So we're not really ruling anything out. We'd like versatility in general, but we know that food, music, and community it has to be part of the equation. We fielded inquiries from private businesses that want to use the space for whatever, or even people say, well, you should make it into apartments or a house, and it would just divide up the space too much. It's relatively untouched since 1924, and that's part of the appeal, that it really doesn't need that much to go back to where it looks exactly like 1924, and we really like that, so... And the fact that it is a black congregation that built that church in the 20s in that location, it made us even more drawn to it. It makes it a little more rare. Most of the markers from state and national, landmarks have to do with white history, like over 90%. And so to have that building in this location right where the redevelopment is happening with the riverfront and all of that, I think it'll make it stand out even more and be more special because a lot of buildings have been taken out by the tornado and urban renewal and, you know, all those things. So whatever is left of downtown history, we want to be part of saving it in every way possible, but also finding a way to use it going forward.
Well, as a history buff myself and as a proponent of placemaking, I'm so grateful that Amy and you are taking this perspective and understanding the weight that you have, the gravity of having the keys to a historic structure, especially one with so much black history. Mm-hmm. And then you want to preserve it and not only preserve but elevate it and take it to the space where anyone can enjoy it and really have it be a part of the downtown environment. So, Lane Murphy, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot and sharing a little bit of your story, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thanks a lot, Austin.
That's the show this week. Tune in on Friday, November 3rd for our next program, and be sure you're following Waco Business News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for content in between episodes. I'm Austin Meek with WacoBusinessNews.com, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.